Hello. You are listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us in the studio Beverly Lehman West, who was born in San Francisco and has lived in Paris and New York and now is a Bainbridge Island resident long term. She was awarded a Washington Poets Association William Stafford Award and has had a poem of hers awarded by Bumbershoot Arts Festival. She also, in one of her careers, taught for 30 years at Seattle Central College. She was teaching ESL. She has read several times in Paris at Shakespeare and Company Bookshop and has produced a book of poetry and short fiction for All the Wrong Reasons. And just recently, that's the title, by the way, she didn't produce it for All the Wrong Reasons. And just recently, memoir, Finding My Way Back to 1950s Paris, which is the book we'll be discussing today. Her poetry has appeared in Spin, Arnazella, Orphic Lute, Exhibition, Signals, and the anthology Island of Geese and Stars. She's been a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle and a freelance travel writer, and her articles on travel have appeared in the Los Angeles Times, Denver Post, New York Herald, Tribune, the Paris Edition, and many other papers. I want to welcome you, Beverly, to the show.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
And it's going to be lots of fun to discuss finding your way back to 1950s Paris. And as your title promises, I'll find my way back too, to a romantic time. So because I know the book and because we've been able to talk about your memoir, I'd love to have you start by reading the poem that's early in the book that tells us something about your adventure.
Okay, it's called Ships Cross Mid-Atlantic, March 1952. A blare from our sister Liberté. We, Île-de-France, respond. All rush to port to wave. Others go to Paris 6 weeks, 6 months, a year. But I have a one-way ticket and a typewriter. Of course I can support myself. Salt air whets my appetite. Bouillon and a British cracker in a deck chair. Then a multi-course French meal with Brie and Bordeaux. I'm not used to either, but become devoted to everything French, even communist riots in Paris. Waves crash against the ship. Many people turn green, but I'm fine. Ready now for bouillabaisse and foie gras.
Thank you, Beverly. Now I'm ready, too.
Okay.
How old were you?
How old am I? 87.
And wow. And how old were you in the time of that poem when you're headed to Paris?
Oh, I was 24. I think I was 24.
And you've begun to put this memoir together after many years, right?
Because yes, after many years. I'd been writing little stories and sent letters home, which my mother saved. So I have all this stuff, and I finally started putting it together in a memoir.
How long ago did you start?
About 5 years ago.
Right, so you were 82? Well, you're going to be an inspiration to many of us who think maybe it's too late, we missed the boat, we didn't do the writing, and hopefully people will come away after our conversation feeling like they can look through their boxes of memorabilia and begin.
Yes, so, I hope so.
Yeah, the poem itself that you just read to us was written...
That poem that I just read, that was probably 10 years ago.
So you see, so your memories are very vivid of that time.
Yes, very vivid.
Because we feel like we're on that ship with you eating that food and not getting seasick.
I hope no one does.
Because you're too excited, so you're going to be fine. And I love that I'm fine. And I know from reading your book that you were fine.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, it's called Finding My Way Back to 1950s Paris, a memoir. Paris. Why?
Why? Oh, I just said, well, I could read some of my preface, actually, and tell,
and it would
tell
us?
You a little bit about
All
that.
Right.
Should I do that first?
That would be great. I'd love to hear more about the why.
This is, how did this memoir come into being? Some of these short pieces were inspired by writing workshops over the past 40-plus years. Others I wrote as letters home to San Francisco in the 50s. Luckily, my mother carefully saved every letter I wrote back then during those 3.5 years. As you will see, this book is a collection of various pieces plus some poems. Why did I want to go to Paris in the first place? I'd wanted to go ever since I was 9 years old, since I'd learned to visualize Paris as that magical city where they danced in the streets, whiled away hours in cafes, and scribbled masterpieces on the left bank. Movies had always been a big influence for me. Just out of high school at age 18, Hollywood seduced me with The Razor's Edge, starring dark-eyed Tyrone Power, who lived on the left bank and picked up mail at the American Express, and with the background lyrics, A Small Café Mamselle. After college, the year before I went to Paris, I saw An American in Paris, which featured Gene Kelly and Leslie Caron dancing through the streets. Also, I went to operas, La Traviata and La Bohème, set in garrets with skylights overlooking the city. Even poverty seemed to be romantic in Paris. At age 24, when I finally got to Paris, I sat in cafes, lived in a garret, which was hard to find, and wrote stories. And, yes, I picked up my mail at the American Express. Paris fulfilled its promise for me. My 3.5 years there in the 50s were filled with adventure. Even now, years later, those are memories I can always turn to. In Paris, I was never afraid, whether waiting for a bus or metro at night or walking along the bank of the Seine in the dark. I felt nothing bad could happen to me in Paris. During my Paris years, I traveled to every European country, sometimes staying in youth hostels, sometimes in small hotels with women friends, called girls in the 50s, or my Canadian boyfriend, and often alone. Traveling became an addiction that, years later, I bequeathed to my sons. Money means tickets. Why did I go to Paris? I can't imagine my life if I hadn't. Eventually, I did do the other things, married late at 39, had 2 children just under the wire, worked on the San Francisco Chronicle, and eventually became an ESL teacher for 30 years, next best thing to traveling. I still cross my sevens, eat with my fork in my left hand, and I'm never quite satisfied unless I have a croissant for breakfast. And I've never stopped writing, with Paris as my muse, in cafes, in libraries, on ferry boats, on buses, news articles, stories, poetry, and now this book. So that tells pretty much about the beginnings.
Well, it tells a lot about your spirit. Thank you. So I know that you went to school through high school in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And then you left California for Nevada.
Yes.
And you studied at the University of Nevada.
Yes, I did, because of the journalism department. It had an important journalism department at that time.
What made it important?
Well, there's a very famous man, Dr. Hillebrand, his name was. And he had a sort of well-known department. People from there got jobs all over the country. And so it sounded to me like it would be fun.
And it was.
I enjoyed it, yes, very much.
So when you say that people from there got jobs all over the country, somehow you knew that you could get jobs in another part of the world.
Yes, I guess I did. That was always there in the back of my mind.
Because shortly after you graduated, or maybe you took a job somewhere in California.
I took a little job for half a year in Napa, the Napa Sunday Journal, which no longer exists. And then I went from there to Paris.
So you felt competent.
Oh, yes.
There's a scene in your book where your parents are saying goodbye and wanting to give you more money. And you go, no, I am going to make it on the money I've saved, which I believe you said was $300.
Yes, I can't believe it, but I did seem to have had $300 in the bank.
In 1950?
In 1952.
And that was going to last how long?
When I left, I went for 3.5 years.
But you didn't think you would live on $300?
No, I didn't. I thought I would be working on my stories and selling stories, and I did do that and got little jobs along the way, too.
And you didn't find it hard to support yourself and live in Paris?
No, I didn't. It was actually, Paris was very cheap in those days. You could get a good meal for 50 cents.
Wow. So I think from your book, I know that Paris was just as romantic as you expected it to be.
It was.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the romance of it for you?
I guess one of the things was I met a few Frenchmen and dated them. My main romance was with an American or North American, a Canadian. And we had an affair and it lasted for a long, long time until I left, really. That was romantic, but it was amazing that he was not dark and swarthy or anything, as I expected my Frenchman would be.
I see. Well, why did you leave?
Oh, I had to leave because I thought if I stay any longer after 3.5 years, I'll become an expatriate, and that would not be a good thing. Why, I don't know, but I just felt I should come back home.
And you came back home as a journalist?
Came back home as a journalist and got a very good job on the San Francisco Chronicle, which was very exciting. And then had a nice romance for a long time, but then the guy left to go back east and left me, and I was kind of unhappy for a while. And because of that unhappiness, I went back to Paris again. This time, the San Francisco Chronicle got me an arrangement where I could go across the country by Greyhound bus and write stories for the Chronicle and other newspapers. And then when I got there, take Icelandic Airline, which was a cheap airline, to Europe, then write stories from Europe. Then I would be on my own, which I was.
But so, your main employment was to write for U.S. newspapers when
you
were there?
Yes, that was the main thing, yeah.
So you kept yourself very busy.
Yes, I did. It was busy. I was busy, but I was also sitting around in cafes writing my journal, and that was the main thing, sitting in cafes.
So do a lot of the pieces for this book come from those journals?
Yes, a lot of it did, and mainly from my letters home.
Which your mom saved.
Yes, she saved. And sometimes I could lift stuff right out of a letter. The chapter about going to visit my friend John for his graduation from Oxford, that part was told about it in a letter. I typed the letter, and I could almost lift it for my book.
Well, you remind me in this discussion of the basic definition of a writer. A writer writes. So whether it's a letter or a journal entry or a short story or a travel article, mm-hmm. you're always doing it, and we should take a lesson from you and always saving it.
Yeah, save it.
Yeah, because you never know when it might become what you're interested in creating a book from or a poem or story.
Yes, very true, very true.
And did you think that you would write a memoir about Paris?
Maybe. I might have thought that sometimes, yeah.
But it took a long time to actually collect the material.
Actually do it, yeah. Because it seemed daunting to have all this material to try to put it all into a book. It just seemed too much. And one good friend of mine said, well, just view the chapters, put them together and see how they look. And so I got quite a few of my little stories and ideas and put them together. And then pretty soon I did have a book. It was easier than I thought to get those, except for the fact that it was hard to be sure that something that happened at one time would not be unusual to have it happen at another time. For example, my sister came over when I was in Paris, and we had an apartment together, so I would have maybe a story about that, and then another chapter would be about she was about to come over. So I had to be sure that the about to come over chapter was before the other one. So that was quite difficult to do. Get those things.
I think time in all genres, dealing with time mm-hmm. in your book is really difficult. And you had a special brand of that problem mm-hmm. with using your journal entries and letters home. But at least you had some dates on your letters home.
I did. That's true. Yeah. I had some dates.
And probably in your journal too.
But yeah, sometimes.
Right. So what you're saying is sometimes stories meld, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then when you have a melded story, you have to make sure that it makes sense to the reader mm-hmm. chronologically.
Mm-hmm. You are tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, Washington. You are listening to In Conversation, discussions on writing and the writing life with Sheila Bender, a bi-monthly chat with writers, publishers, and those who support the literary arts. Today, Sheila Bender is talking with Bainbridge Island poet and author Bev West about the writing of her memoir, Finding My Way Back to 1950s Paris.
A lot of people are very interested lately in writing full-length books made up of short pieces. Mm-hmm. A lot of novels written that way now, a lot of memoir. And I think it suits us, really, because not everybody has a novelist's mind. I think to write a book-length narrative that's just one long mm-hmm. narrative requires a novelist's mind. And a lot of us write articles, poems, short stories like you have. So what advice do you have to somebody who thinks, well, gee, I do have some writing in my journal, in letters, or things I just started on my computer and they're all in a file? Do you have any advice on how a person might look back at what they have written and think of it in terms of memoir?
Yes, I think one thing would be to go to a writer's workshop and also get an editor who's somebody that you know well and who knows you well, like my friend Nancy Rico was my editor.
And your workshop leader.
Yes, workshop leader also. And I've known her for years. And so she was able to help me put things together and decide, well, now that should go and that shouldn't go.
Do you know how she did that?
No.
Oh, it was magic, editorial magic.
Yes, it was magic, yeah. I guess, yes.
But it made sense to you.
Yeah, and yeah. She's the one who suggested the preface to let people know how things got, because there were certain things that were like letters and certain things that were like a poem and or mm-hmm. were a poem.
I've heard a lot of people who are trained in journalism say that writing their own story was very hard because they were so trained to write other people's stories or mm-hmm. objectively. Mm-hmm. And I think even if you haven't had training as a journalist, there's something about writing your own life that the simplest things that an editor can say from the outside, what a reader needs, are sort of really, wow, that's miraculous to yeah. the writer who's kind of butting their head against the wall a lot about how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? And I think it's just so interesting how hard it is to make our own lives
yes.
have the shape of a book.
Yes, and I had to try to make everything either funny or interesting. I didn't want anything to be boring.
Well, I think you've certainly succeeded.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, every time you mention, as you did in your preface, the food, the names for things, the music, the architectural places, the museums, the paintings. I mean, all of that keeps it, is never boring. It's just because in the context of what you're exploring, it's magical. Mm. And I know that's one of the things that I really appreciate about the book and also the title, Finding My Way Back. You really have conjured it back. So it feels very present when you're reading these experiences mm-hmm. from the 50s. And as a baby boomer generation myself, I find it very interesting that my generation seems to believe it invented independence. And here you are, a young woman in the early 50s, and you are going to Paris where you know you will succeed. Mm. It's humbling for a baby boomer
Wonderful.
To read yeah. this. Yeah. So what else can you tell us about your book and the editorial process and the process of developing things in workshop?
Well, one thing was that I have this man in the book who's an old friend, and he's gay, and I had a crush on him at one time early in my days in Paris. He's English. I thought his reticence was being English and so forth, but kind of part of me knew that he was maybe gay too. And so I have a poem about him and something. He was the one I went to Oxford to see his graduation, and I mentioned various things about him and his gayness. And I had to write him and be sure that it was all right to put these things in. He's completely out now and so forth, has a partner. Before he wrote back, I wrote him and asked him, and then he didn't answer for a couple of weeks. And then I wrote again and said, oh, I guess I shouldn't have even suggested that. I won't even have any of that, you know. But then our letters crossed, and he, or if you can cross on email.
I can.
And anyway, he said, oh, of course you can write anything you want. And I went to check it with my partner, and we both agree. And so he was very, very open about his sexuality, and he and his partner became official partners as soon as it became legal. That was kind of interesting that I was worried about that.
But. So you were, because of email, it was really easy to contact him.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, I think that's an issue when we write memoir of any kind, is if we're involving facts and information about somebody else, what do we do about that? Mm-hmm. And I think the first level of what do we do is ask. Mm. And often, more often than not, if the writing is fully manifest and it's not just some sort of vendetta against somebody, people understand that it's your story and they figured into it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. usually they're quite delighted to read the impact yes. and effect that they had on you.
Yes, yes. Yeah. He did seem to be. He has written me about that he seems to be likes everything that I wrote. I wrote quite a bit, too.
Uh-huh. Oh, good. So that's a happy ending to that part of your book, then.
Yeah.
What other things did you learn putting this together?
Well, some things were much too long, and I had to cut them down. And Nancy would suggest that this part should go in front of that part, and I think it was mainly getting things together correctly and also so that they had a interesting ending. And I did everything in my life, really, from 1952 to the present when I met my current partner, or not current partner, my partner. It was interesting getting the whole life together.
So it does, your book carries through to today.
To today, yes, that's right.
And today includes Paris?
I'm going to go to Paris. I've been to Paris, I guess, about 2 years ago with my partner, and we're going to go again this spring. So that'll be wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Will you visit the Shakespeare and Company bookstore?
I will certainly go there. I read there two or three times in the 70s and 80s, and I hope that I'll get to read there again. But now they've gotten very important. I know that they're scheduled well into the next half year.
Wow. So have you contacted them?
Yes, I have, but I haven't heard.
Oh, how delightful, though, to think that even you can walk into that store with all those memories there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So what else in your book brings you back to Paris?
I have a good friend that I see, we will see again. And she wasn't from my Paris days, but it was because of my speaking French that we got acquainted. So we stayed with her. She lives near Nice in a little town, village. And so we'll go and see her. And I have a few friends there still, but not many.
A lot of your friends from those days made it big.
Yes.
In reading this, the painters.
Yes,
others.
That's right. Uh-huh. Sam Francis, he's no longer living, but was a good friend of mine in those days. And he drew huge, huge pictures. They were so big that they wouldn't fit on his studio wall. And so he had to try to find another place. And he somehow found a big, huge wall in another little hotel. He became noted. I guess there was a writer, Gabriel Viraldi, who was French and who became an important writer. We don't know him here, but he was known in Paris. He won some prizes. I knew him a little bit. And a few other people became noted.
It's a very fertile time that you were there, very exciting.
Yeah,
time.
Yeah.
Right. Was it a big switch for you in your writing career to move from your journalism to poetry and short vignettes?
Well, my journalism often was short vignettes, and I tried to do that. I still like doing that. In fact, my voice is almost the same as it was in 50 years ago. It's sort of interesting that I haven't changed. I don't know if other people are like that, too.
I think what's interesting is that somehow you have the opportunity to use that voice in the earlier days of journalism, where I'm not so sure first person was that common. What do you think?
Maybe not. In fact, memoirs weren't that common in those days either.
Right, so you were an original.
I guess so.
That $300 in your pocket really paid off.
Yeah, that was good, that $300.
Yeah, I'm so taken with the idea that you were so self-directed to know that you could leave your journalism program, your job at the little newspaper, and go to Paris and become a writer. So many of us dream of that. So you have any advice for younger or older writers who want to get in touch with something romantic that they've always felt would be important to them?
Yeah, I think it's important to just go and do it. Of course, it's so much more expensive now. It's not always easy, but I think that they should just do it.
So how might they just do it? What are some of the ways you've gone to Paris?
Well, I guess they save their money and go, or else try to get a little job over there or something that can happen too.
What about loneliness? And in your book, it doesn't sound like you were lonely very much, but
I was sometimes, though. I remember being extremely homesick once in a while, but it didn't last, I guess.
Because you could always go to a cafe.
Yes, that's
and
true.
An aperitif.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. Just do it is what you said.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just take
it. And before you get married, before you get tied down at all or get a mortgage or anything like that.
And what if it's too late? What do you think? Can we still be adventurous in some way, even if we already have marriages and children and mortgages?
Yes, I guess you can.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard to get over there.
Yeah. But sometimes maybe you were very influenced by music and film and literature. Mm-hmm. So that fed you for many years before
you
could
go
there.
Yes, it did. That's very true. Especially movies. They were very influential to me and still are. I love movies.
Movies about anything in particular?
About Paris, of course, and French movies.
I'm very interested in the fact that you religiously attended workshops
mm-hmm.
and really listened to the editorial advice that Nancy Rico had for
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Was that totally easy, or were there times when you just wanted to say, I can't really do this?
No, it was easy because I sometimes would write poetry. It wasn't always in connection with my book.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always enjoyed Nancy, and she was very helpful on the She not only edited it, but she proofread it, and she was very helpful.
Yeah. The fact that you said that you needed to have good endings for the vignettes, and having read your book, the endings of each vignette are very good.
Yeah, that's good.
And they make you feel satisfied with what you've read so far and ready for the next vignette to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's good.
So I think what you said about it wasn't hard in the workshops because you didn't always write just for your book. You also wrote poems that you wanted to write. And I think that's something we have to remember as writers. It's sometimes we feel like we're off task because something else comes to us to write about. And it can maybe get to flood us with too many ideas, but it's good to write what is in us to write, don't you think?
I think definitely, yeah.
And then we can get back to our other, what we might think of primary work, with a better spirit.
Yeah, and you can also write an article or something that has nothing to do with your book or with one other subject.
Uh-huh. Are you still writing articles?
I am, and I'm spending a lot of time promoting my book and taking it, trying to get it an editor to accept it or to review it or something like that. And so I'm spending a lot of time on that, but I do plan to spend more travel writing time too. And
so what's your intent when you're doing travel writing? What do you want the reader to get from it?
I usually try to make them a little bit amusing and try to get a laugh out of it and to get them to go, also to go.
To know that they'll enjoy themselves.
I think it broadens them, of course it does, to travel, and so I think people should travel.
Money equals tickets.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Beverly, this has been a really fun conversation, and I admire you so much for your work, for getting to your memoir just a few years ago, to buckling down and doing the work of going through all that memorabilia, for working with an editor, for being so professional about this important book about your life and handling it as you would handle all your other assignments. So I want to wish you bon voyage on your upcoming trip. I picture you taking notes, sitting in cafes, and even though you have a partner to talk to, I think you'll have time to jot down some more information for some more stories and articles, don't you?
Oh, I hope so. Yes, I plan to do that.
So people can buy your book in bookstores, online.
Yes, online and at Amazon now, and also at maybe at Eagle Harbor Book Company on Bainbridge. And I'm trying to get it in other bookstores too. But there's one here on
right, the imprint bookstore.
Port Townsend. Yeah.
So Finding My Way Back to 1950s Paris by Beverly Lehman West. I know you're going to enjoy the read. And thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Sheila.
You have been listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender. For more of Sheila's interviews, please go to Sheila's website, writingitreal.com/audio. In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer. Announcer is Kurt Vanderslice.